Come back to order. Would you read the roll, please? Gotcha. Not quite ready.
Fish. Saltzman. Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Well, we have a proclamation, which we might have read this morning, but we didn't. But fortunately, Mike Houck is here now, and we will read it now.
He was here this morning as well.
I know. Yikes. So, welcome, Mike, and come on up, and I will read this proclamation. And it's not an original idea. It's a 28-year-old idea, and it's still a good idea. It says, whereas the great blue heron is a majestic symbol of the City of Portland's efforts to restore, protect, and sustain ecologically healthy habitats for fish and wildlife, and for the enjoyment of citizens in Portland and throughout the region. And whereas Great Blue Heron Week represents an opportunity for the City of Portland to recommit its efforts to the natural environment by celebrating past successes and future challenges. And whereas the City of Portland continues to distinguish itself as a national leader in the use of green infrastructure and integrating the built and natural environments. And whereas the City of Portland is an active partner in the Intertwine Alliance, collaborating with more than 113 Alliance partners to create the Intertwine, a world-class system of parks, trails, and natural areas for the Portland-Vancouver metropolitan region. And whereas the City of Portland continues to work with the partners of the Intertwine Alliance, including the Audubon Society of Portland, Urban Green Spaces Institute, and Metro, to acquire, restore, and manage habitats. And whereas the City of Portland is dedicated to ensuring its citizens have access to nature wherever they live, work, and play. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim May 27th through June 1st, 2014, to be the 28th annual Great Blue Heron Week in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this week by participating in the many activities and special events hosted by local nonprofit organizations and government agencies. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, it's not a new idea. In fact, Mayor Clark was giving a presentation to a group of natural resource managers from around the country down at the Hilton Hotel 28 years ago and mentioned great blue herons probably 30 times in his presentation. So I, of course, didn't miss that opportunity and had a chat with him outside the Hilton following his presentation and suggested that perhaps we needed a city bird. He agreed with two whoops, and 2 weeks later, there was a proclamation, and it may sound a little trivial to some folks, but the reality is that this does provide us with the opportunity to slow down and think about what we have done in the past and what we intend to do in the future to make sure that they share the city, they being great blue herons and their fellow critters in Portland. I handed you two pages. One, I was going through my documents the other day and the day that the great blue heron was proclaimed as Portland City Bird, I sent a note to William Stafford, who at the time was poet laureate for the state of Oregon, asking him if he'd be willing to pen something appropriate that would celebrate the great blue heron. And I think he came up with one of the most eloquent statements about our relationship to nature and the city that one could hope for, certainly more eloquent than I could do. So what I thought I'd do is just read this, just take a second. And maybe we can just reflect on our past achievements and what we need to do in the future. He titled it Spirit of Place. Out of their loneliness for each other, two reeds, or maybe two shadows, lurch forward and become suddenly a life lifted from the dawn to the rain. It is the wilderness come back again, a lagoon with our city reflected in its eye. We live by faith in such presences. It is a test for us, that thin but real undulating figure that promises, if you keep the faith, I will exist at the edge where your vision joins the sunlight in the rain. Heads in the light, feet that go down in the mud where the truth is. And I'd hope to see some of you on. We do have a number of events. In fact, Virtual Labor Bureau in the City of Portland has something going on this week. Commissioner Fritz, I'll be meeting with Mike Fea, one of the co-designers of Tanner Springs Park at 5 o'clock for herons and a happy hour this afternoon. Anyway, we have a lot of cool events. So the final one being every year, the culminating event is a kayak trip around Ross Island. So if any of you are free on Sunday morning and want to take a little trip around Ross Island, that'd be great. Thank you very
great
much.
Work. Oh, thank you. What a great poem. I've not seen this before. That's really, really beautiful. we might want to find a way to make that more permanently and visible, available to people. So
I would be happy to work with you on that.
That's
Who has
really
the original business?
Pardon?
Do you
have I don't. You know, I have a JPEG of it. I need to do some research. I know he sent it to me 28 years ago.
Plan that the Olmsteds did that we often talk about.
I'll do some research with Kim.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, I've got a current great blue heron anecdote, which is I live near Westmoreland Park, which of course is being elaborately reconfigured to make for unobstructed stream passage where there used to be a kind of unfortunate pond, and the work is nearing completion, but the local herons have already started hanging out there. And on my way home two nights ago, there was a heron perched on the railing on the little bridge over Crystal Springs Creek next to our fire station. So he just looked like he owned the place, you know, which, you know, he does because he's our city bird. But it was cool to see this heron just standing up on the railing, you know, not a care in the world, and waiting for the park work to get done.
Right. The beautiful thing about Tanner Springs, by the way, is shortly after it was dedicated, I was going down up north on Northwest 10th, flash across the windshield. It was an osprey that had dived into that little pond to catch a koi.
Wow.
Seriously. And lately, there has been a heron hanging out there, and I've got a fabulous photo that somebody who lives in the Encore took of a probably about a four-year-old boy standing beak to face, maybe 20 feet apart, just staring one another at Tanner Springs. Pretty amazing to think that something that small that was created specifically to try to reflect what was in that area 100 years ago is definitely panned out. And I sent an image to Herbert Dreiseidel in Germany, who was one of the designers, told him he just had a great compliment
paid
to his
great
design.
Great. Well, thank you, Mike,
thank you for
all that you do. Here, I'll bring you this. All right. Thank you, Mike. Let's move on to items 530. Well, 532 first, please.
532, accept the report of the Chief Administrative Officer for the quarterly report of the Technology Oversight Committee.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Who's going to start? Ben, you?
I'm kicking us off.
Okay.
I'm Abby Kopic. I work in the Office of Management and Finance, Business Operations. And I'm joined by Ben Berry, Chief Technology Officer for the city, and Colleen Gadbois, who's one of our Citizen Technology Oversight Committee members. And we're here to present the quarterly report for January through March 2014. Just a brief recap, in 2011, City Council created an independent 5-member citizen committee to oversee technology projects at the city. The citizen members who are unable to join us today are Wilfred Pinfold, Ken Neubauer, Doretta Schrock, Joshua Mitchell, and Colleen is here with us today. Quality assurance provided by external contractors is a required component for projects under the Technology Oversight Committee. As I mentioned, this reporting period for this report is January through March. During this quarter, there were no major administrative developments. All the templates and tools we've developed in the past are working well, and no new projects joined the technology oversight portfolio this quarter. But the water billing project did cycle off. It was completed when it went live to the public in January of 2014. So that was our major development from the admin side. And now I'm going to turn it over to Colleen. She's going to give a brief status update on each project, and Ben's going to provide a little bit more details.
Welcome.
Good morning. We're going to start by talking about the Information Technology Advancement Project. We call that ITAP. Currently, that project, it's scoped as a paperless permit project from the Bureau of Development Services. the current status. The project is meeting expectations in its current phase, but as the TOC, we continue to monitor it closely due to its size and complexity.
Good afternoon, Council. This is Ben Berry. I'm the Chief Technology Officer for the City of Portland. What I plan to do is give you, as Abby mentioned, the January through March report, but where I can, I'll give you more recent information as we have acquired that information through the TLC meeting just recently. So for the Information Technology Advancement Project, ITAP, major accomplishment for this quarter, the project completed phase one in March, which included a significant milestone of a formal project plan. This plan includes 17 deliverables, including a detailed timeline and implementation plan that will guide staff through the duration of the project. In terms of the milestones for next quarter, I'll mention just a few points here. The project is working to add a limited-term project coordinator and training resource, and again, that was during January through March of this year. Risk and concerns in terms of schedule, the project plan was a bit delayed. It was a few months behind schedule, but it's now complete. So far, the delay has not impacted the overall end for the project, although, and this is a caveat for the most recent TOC meeting that we had, we actually moved from a yellow from TOC into a red. So now the Bureau, and the director, Paul Scarlett, is engaged in turning that around for the next formal report. But I do want to let you know that is a piece that we have added as a caveat of where we are on schedule.
Which part moved to red?
The schedule portion of ITAP. The vendor replaced their project manager, and there was significant delays before the new person started, which contributed to the yellows in January through March in the schedule dashboard. A couple of minor scope issues came up this quarter. These issues have all since been resolved, but it did delay the project coming into the last TLC meeting. The QA has started rating the project green, but the TLC, this is again January through March, but the TLC had kept it yellow to continue to be cautious due to the size and complexity of the project. So I want to pause there and see if there's any questions about the schedule for ITAP. Remember, this is an $11.8 million project.
But we have the QA assessment of green and more recent information moving it to red?
Well, it moved from green from the QA assessment. TOC was shown as yellow.
Right.
But because of these schedule impacts now for April, they're showing the QA having the schedule in red. 3 months to turn that around, to get it back into the yellow, eventually back into green. And we believe they can do it, but we didn't want to make, we want to make sure you were aware of that as an early warning alert. Now, if you look at the overall matrix and chart, I think you have this on the screen now. TOC is showing the schedule for January through March in the yellow. Budget was yellow. Scope was yellow. Okay. Any questions on ITAP? You want to go to the next one?
Okay, we're going to move on to the Affordable Housing Software Project. That project combines several data systems of the Portland Housing Bureau into one interactive system. That's the scope of it. So the status for Q1 during that reporting period, the TOC had concerns with the lingering delays, but the project recently did go live in April. So some good turnaround.
All right, so as Colleen has mentioned, the project did go live in April, but there's some things I want to make sure you understand. After an original go-live date was over a year ago, the project continued to struggle with delays from both the vendor and the city staff working on a final loan servicing module. So the loan servicing module was the piece that was not implemented on time. The upcoming milestones for next quarter, the housing staff realized the loan files were not ready for migration, so significant research and manual entry process took place to ensure the files got completed. The project is being is back in the QA vendor camp at this point, and the vendor is doing a 90-day post-implementation review of the housing project. Risk concerns, of course, the schedule. The schedule had been in red ever since the loan module missed last year's deadline. Both the project team and the TLC have had low confidence in the subsequent deadlines. So it's exciting to hear that the system actually went live April 1st. But again, the budget, we still have not paid the vendor a total amount for the budget. We've paid them about 30% of their invoices until they work through any remaining issues. So we still have about 70% to pay out on that. Although we spent time, which is dollars in terms of staff time, to do the testing of the issues as they were released prior to that April 1st. And I believe there are about 20 current outstanding issues remaining on the housing software, even though it is now in production and running. Questions on the affordable housing software project?
So it's it's online now. It's being used. But we're still expecting more from the vendor?
Yes, it is online. It's at a state where it can actually run production now, but there's some still nuances within the code that we've asked the vendor to still fix and address, and they are working diligently on those, even though the system still produces good product and is in production. And we'll hold off until the final payment, until those 20 issues are resolved.
And so the red you're showing, the TOC is showing red, that applies to last, as of the end of March.
That was the end of March because of the schedule and the budget. Actually, the schedule piece was red, the budget was in yellow, and the scope was in green.
And so the schedule's now in green. If we had April in front of us, right, it would be green.
Right.
We'll confirm that with you, but yeah.
Okay. Our next project, Office 365. That project is responsible for migrating all city computers to Microsoft Office 365. So that's a pretty big project. Currently, or Q1, I should say, the project has a tight but manageable timeline. As a TOC, we are monitoring it closely, but the project is generally on track.
So in terms of some major accomplishments for the 365, last fall the project changed approaches. So the migrations are happening in waves rather than every one at once, which allows the highest priority computers to migrate first. As of the end of March, all computers impacted by the April 2014 Microsoft deadline have been successfully migrated. You'll recall that Microsoft's end of life for 2003 software ended on April 8th. So the concern was making sure all the payment card industry based computers were migrated to the new software. We got through that. In fact, we have migrated now 3,000 of the 4,300 PCs that the city has running the software. Some upcoming milestones for next quarter. The final migration waves are pushed back to August 1st, and we believe we can hit that date. A schedule and the beginning of the email migrations is needed next quarter. So we have two things. We have the migration of the software, then we have the post the PST files that have all the data from many of the older files that will come along in migration over time. Questions on the Office 365 project?
I have a question. Ben, we're trying to get our hands around some of the contracting numbers in the infrastructure bureaus, and we're looking at sort of the difference between an initial estimate that is done, say, by an engineer to the initial bidding to the actual contract price, and trying to figure out, you know, along that continuum, what's the number we should be using as a baseline number? And it turns out that some of these one-off customized projects require such innovation and change that the initial estimate is not particularly helpful.
Yes.
It's really where, frankly, it's where people come in on their bidding for the project that tells you what the market thinks the cost of that is. When I look at the chart that you've created where it says initial estimate at TOC intake, you say high degree of confidence at that level, but how can we have a high degree of confidence at the initial at that early stage when we're not I mean, presumably we haven't finished figuring out all the bells and whistles that the users are asking for and whether there's any change in scope and the like.
Commissioner Fish, you're right. There probably should be some variability in our thinking around the timeline because you're in the very beginning stages of the project. And that was for the schedule portion. So the high level of confidence was for schedule. Now, it just so happens we are meeting the schedule on the project.
I'm sorry, I misread that.
So that actually turned out well for us. But in theory, you would have more variability in your thinking. Maybe it's more of a low or a medium. But in this particular case, we're actually hitting that.
It just seems to me there are certain projects that we fund that uniquely start with a low to medium level of
yes.
confidence because you haven't really fully scoped it out yet. You
exactly.
haven't figured out what all the users are asking. And as you add components, it changes the scope of the project. That's different than a project which is over budget or
right.
or you see where I'm going?
You're absolutely right.
The public doesn't often make that distinction. So I'm delighted to hear that the confidence level at that very early estimate is typically low to medium because
yes.
I think that sounds about right to me because
mm-hmm.
we're flying blind until we move a little further down the project. At the point in which it seems to me you bid it, that's when the confidence ought to be pretty high.
You're absolutely right. We just got lucky that we hit that particular one, but normally that's the way it works. And as you see, the QA for January through March, the schedule, budget, and scope is all green for the quality assurance, and the TOC, because of the complexities and some unknowns, showed the schedule and the budget in yellow and the scope in green.
Okay, more questions?
Okay. The Risk Information Solution Connect, we call it RISC, is a project of the Bureau of Internal Business Services to replace several unsupported systems with one integrated system. The status is of Q1. The TOC is currently concerned about the project timeline and the delay of the final piece of functionality.
Under major accomplishments for the quarter, 90% of the project went live in December 2013. The project had deferred medical bill review functionality until after initial project go-live, which represented about 10% of the project. So 90% went live. We were still working on the last 10%. Now the project is working to implement that last piece of functionality. The vendor is subcontracting the remaining work, which has required a more detailed statement of work and negotiation of a revised work order. In terms of upcoming milestones for the quarter, the configuration and the implementation tentatively is planned for August of this year, 2014. Risk and concerns in terms of schedule, although 90% of the project going live was a major accomplishment, delays remained with the final 10% of the functionality that was deferred. In terms of budget, the project is currently in negotiation with the vendor for partial payment of the functionality that was completed. So far, the vendor has been paid very little. And again, that was January through March of this year. And finally, the TOC has requested the QAC be brought back, and they have been brought back for the duration of the project, which will be that last 10% of the project.
So if we're 90% functional and we've held back on payment, why are we rating budget red?
The rationale for the red rating on TOC, if we are still trying to figure out the specifications for the last 10%, we don't know how to do a schedule if we are still in the throes of defining the specifications. So that's why they're calling it red. If we don't have the specifications, how do we define the budget for how much that 10% will cost? That was the thinking of the TOC. The scope has never changed, and that's why it's green.
So when we rate a project red on budget, it's danger of going over budget, not scale of how much we go over budget.
It's the potential for going over budget.
But, Mr. Berry, getting back to the question I asked you before, if the original view of the project is it's a two-door Chevy, and later it evolves to a Corvette. How do we account for that so that it is not technically deemed over budget and instead right-size it? Sometimes projects begin as one thing, morph into something else, and yet the way we track these things, it is technically over budget, even though you could say that you could at some point hit reset and say what started as a Pinto is now a Corvette, and let's look at, as a Corvette, are we on track or not?
Well, one reason why it went over budget was because we had to add an additional project manager that was never accounted for in the budget. So that added about $75,000 to begin with, and then I think it began to grow after that. So I think that was the first point that the project was actually over budget.
What if it was a function of a change in scope and not something to do with the particular project that we originally came to us? What if the mayor says midstream, I'd like you to actually upgrade 20 computers, not 10, so it becomes a different project? Does it get recast so that the baseline budget assumption changes?
We have recast projects based on that characteristic that you just mentioned, Commissioner Fish.
But I'm not sure our internal tracking stuff does that. This is perhaps for another day, this conversation, but sure. I'm interested in knowing at what point does the scope of a project change sufficiently that you have to change the basis.
Yeah. We can get back to you with more formal description for that.
It seems like there are occasions where history starts anew because the project has morphed into something else, and so the original estimate is not particularly instructive as to whether you're on track or not, because you've over time changed the scope of the project that it's something else.
And we actually have done that to some of the TLC projects in the past. So we can get you back to a formal response on that.
One comment I would add is I think that the TOC, when they hear project updates from a bureau, I think they take that into account in their scoring. I think for the TOC, the red really signifies they want bureau director intervention and awareness of something that really needs immediate attention. I think after they've dealt with it and the scope has changed officially, I think sometimes it does go back to green.
And I would say that the red is more of an internal mechanism to get attention and action within the system. The budget item is what the public often views, and sometimes I think they get a skewed view if the budget increases and we don't fully explain that the project scope has changed along the way, in those instances where it's attributable to a scope change, not to some glitch right in the technology or relationship with our vendor.
There is one final point I wanted to go back on the last page of your document there, page 11 of 11. Back in March 5th of 2014, I presented the citywide technology assessment, and we are in the throes of working through each of those 10 pieces that I brought, those 10 recommendations that I brought to the council. So the first one up was the communities of interest, and we are now having our second meeting with our communities of interest with our bureaus.
Further questions? Well, we appreciate this regular update.
Mayor, I have a question.
Sure,
I'm related to this.
Yeah.
Mr. Berry, just three comments I want to share with you. Number one, POEM and Water and others are doing a debrief from Friday's boil notice.
Yes.
And one of the things we're trying to get our hands around is what triggered the crashing of the city's website. And the initial answer we got is it has something to do with when 200,000 people went online to access the mapping feature and something else. Each one of them had to be encrypted somehow, and that caused an overload. And so there was a workaround done by BTS to get out from under that so that we got up and running. Number one, I'm guessing, as since you're the chief technology officer, you'll be part of a ongoing debrief on this.
Yes, I will be.
To help us understand how that happened, because fortunately it was a boil water notice in an instance where there was no reports of any serious health consequences. But the fact that you have a live press conference and so many people go on our website and causes it to crash is something we all need to better understand. So you'll be part of the debrief on that issue?
Commissioner Fish, yes, I will be. In fact, I spoke with David Schaff just this afternoon about that.
Second, it occurred to me, since I know so little about technology, that another part of the discussion should be having a BTS professional actually at the emergency center available to answer questions, because we rely so heavily now on social media, technology, websites, and maybe have someone actually embedded in the site who's able to answer real-time questions and debug things. Just food for thought.
That's a very good suggestion, Commissioner. We will definitely look into that and see how we can make that happen.
And the final emergencies. Thing, we adopted at the mayor's request today a budget note which requires us to look at different billing mechanisms, consolidating billings for the city's functions, and also potentially accelerating the process of moving people to monthly billing through the Water Bureau. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted that particular project is no longer on your sheet. But there are going to be some big questions that we have to look at in terms of how we might scale this faster. We only have about 8,500 people currently getting monthly bills, and there are hundreds of thousands who obviously we'd like to induce to do it. So will you be part of those ongoing discussions about how we might scale the monthly billing program up?
Yes, I can be a part of those discussions. Most recently I spoke to Thomas Lanham about this and how do we scale them higher and faster. One of the things is making sure that our citizens will have access to the tools they need to have it be mandatory to use this kind of billing.
We'll be looking at the cost issues. We'll be looking at sort of the cautious rollout issues we've already been dealing with to make sure we don't overpromise and have a system that fails. But if we are going to, another big hurdle down the road is perhaps relaxing our requirement that people be willing to pay electronically. There are some customers that want to go to monthly billing, but they're going to need a paper bill of some sort or an alternate way of paying. And those are all very complicated questions, so I'm glad to hear that you'll be part of that team looking at options.
I definitely will be.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Well, we appreciate the work, and we appreciate the committee very much having, again, eyes on these big costs and big projects in ways that allow us to capture problems while they're still small critters rather than enormous ones. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anyone that's signed up to testify on this item?
No one signed up.
Okay. Anyone want to speak on this item? If not, then I need a motion to approve the report.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Fish. Osman?
Yes, thank you for the good report and for the good graphics, too. It's a lot easier to visually comprehend it with the color-coded charts.
That was a direct response of last time we were here.
That's right. Thank you. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you very much. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, especially to our citizen members who put in a lot of time on this, and to the committee and staff. On the ITAP project, Director Paul Scarlett and I were aware of that issue, and we agree with the findings and are taking action to get us back on track with the schedule. So we appreciate very much the partnership and oversight of these projects. Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, this is a good way for us to hold ourselves accountable for high level of quality control and important work. So thank you for your work. And, yeah, nothing like a big, big red indicator to get everybody's attention when we need to. So thank you. Aye. Okay, next item.